Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
I have a new slogan for our show. See what you think. Unrehearsed, unscripted, and unnecessary. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Dr. Dave has your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Vila Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Violence shuts down Gentlemen's Club. Details later. Strippers on loose, Sterling at night.
We have problems with a neighbor, including but not limited to the fact that she keeps driving through our yard.
Not to mention the dead squirrel that her contractors threw at the kids.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. This and more tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool. Refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later, Sterling at night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
What a thrill it is to be on a radio show that features strippers on the loose, and a retired New York City police detective sharing information about stolen vehicles that resulted in murder. There's no other show like this. It's live. 9 minutes past the hour, live coast to coast. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is the busiest travel week of the year. It is a myth perpetrated by local TV editors. It is a myth that the busiest travel day of the year is the day before Thanksgiving. It's not. Every time they shoot a reporter outside of your airport on the day before Thanksgiving, that reporter, she's always standing there alone. There's no traffic on the roadway. Nobody's around. It is a perpetual myth by incompetent television news editors. Well, this is the busiest day of the year. You better do it from the airport. No, my friend. This weekend is the busiest travel weekend of the year. This past Friday, busiest day. Why is that? Why is that, Mr. Sterling? I will tell you. It's because Friday is when all the business people come home. So it's busy right there. But then it's also when all the vacation people come home or start their vacation. So you have, for the first time all year, the confluence, SAT word, the confluence of people on vacation and people coming back from work. This is the busiest travel weekend of the year. And that brings us to the special hell that is experienced on airplanes today. Two terrible things have happened. One is every airline has figured out how to put in more seats. Places we never even knew they could put in seats, now there are seats. The other thing, little reported, little known, back in January, most airlines cut back on their spiffs for frequent flyers. I have a friend who has flied over 2 million miles on Delta, and he was about to take off. He calls me from the phone. I said, well, I assume you've got your nice first class seat. You're probably in 2B, which is on the aisle. That's the best seat for me. Oh, no. I'm in coach. I mean, what do you mean you're in coach? You're in coach L.A. to New York with a 2 million miler on Delta? Yeah, all the airlines have cut back. All of them have cut back on their spiffs to frequent flyers. Big mistake. Recently, a passenger got up in an airplane and started to scream at the two people sitting next to him because they were so fat. Shouting at them, saying, you are too fat to fly. How dare you take up my seat that I paid for because you're too fat, and started blaming the passenger for being too fat? It wasn't the fat passenger's fault. The great thing about Gordon Bethune, who for years was the CEO of Continental Airlines, he did a brilliant thing. He realized that more and more people were bringing their bags onto the planes, and that they were putting it in the overhead racks, and there was no room. Rather than do something draconian, as many airlines would do, he said, well, let's make bigger overhead racks, bigger overhead shelves. You go on a Continental Airlines, especially an old Continental Airline plane, you will notice that the overhead bins are huge. That's because Gordon Bethune, rather than saying, well, you know, we can't take any more bags, he said, we need to make bigger overhead bins. That's the correct answer. There should be two additional types of seats on every airline, which would cut down on the hostility. You know, the airline employees are endlessly, oh, people are so hostile toward us, it's not pleasant anymore, we have a terrible work environment, why is everybody so angry? Everybody on those airplanes is so angry because they're too close to each other. Whatever spiffs, benefits, courtesies used to be given out, no more. You used to fly coast to coast, you used to fly L.A. to New York, what would you get? In coach, you'd get a choice of three different entrees, vegetarian, beef that they cut next to your seat, in coach, and a vegetarian and a pasta dish. You had a choice. And two different types of desserts, sometimes three. Butterscotch sundae, chocolate sundae, hot fudge, strawberry sundae, in coach. In first class, it was lobster and caviar all the way. That's all gone. You're lucky if you can buy a cheese box. Now you're lucky if you can buy a box of cheese, which has a piece of cheese, a suspicious piece of salami that looks like it was saved from a gift basket from Christmas, and a couple crackers. And some strange dip for the crackers. Don't even want to know what the dip is. And you wonder why people are angry? There are two types of seats that need to be installed in every airline. One for people who are over a certain weight. People who are over a certain weight deserve, and the people around them deserve, those people deserve wider seats. Gordon Bethune, bigger overhead bins, fat people, wider seats. And there needs to be a separate section with a partition for kids under three. Because nothing can make noise and disturbances like kids under three on an airplane for 3.5 hours. This problem has gone on now for decades. I don't know why any airline hasn't adopted bigger seats for fatso and a special section soundproofed for the kids. Seems reasonable to me. Welcome. This is a live radio show where you and I share our actual lives, not op-ed page theory. I don't know any theory. I don't know how to express theory, but I sure know about water in the basement. You and me. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Mayor Frank Rizzo.
Show you what kind of a man you are. You're less than a man. Okay? You're a crumb creep.
This entire 40 minutes is made possible by Mark Simone. Mark Simone, I have great stories about Mark. I'm going to share those with you in coming up in just seconds. Trouble on the airlines. This is the busiest travel month of the year. This past weekend is the busiest travel weekend of the year. There should be fat seats. There should be a separate section of extra wide seats for people over a certain poundage. There's no reason that you and I should have to sit there with some person who's just too big for an airline seat. They suffer and I suffer, and I don't get a discount on sharing, you know, half of my seat with this guy, this woman. There should be a separate section on the airplanes for babies, kids under 3 or 4, or kids prone to making noise. It should be a soundproof section. These problems have existed for decades with airlines, and the solution is so simple and so cheap. I don't know why it hasn't been done. Then I had a personal problem a couple years ago. actually before I was married. I would have understood it better then. But I'm on a Saturday morning flight, business flight, coming home. There's nothing sweeter than being on a business flight coming home on a Saturday morning. The airport's empty. The planes always take off on time. The plane's half empty. It's great. And I'm in first class because I dress right, which is really the key to getting boosted. It really is. It used to be that the people at the desk could work around it and give it to you if they liked you. But now it's all computerized waiting list, much more difficult. It has to happen on the plane. I'm in first class. I'm at the aisle. Next to me sits a woman. Woman sits down right next to me with a baby. And she starts to breastfeed. I had never sat next to somebody for 3 hours who was breastfeeding. And it was uncomfortable for me. No, I didn't think it was wrong. No, I knew intellectually she had that right. And what a lucky baby. But the fact is, it was difficult for me to relax 14 inches from the baby and the breast feeding. There should be a separate section in airlines for nursing moms so they have their privacy and I can read the New York Post without feeling guilty. You know, you don't want to read the New York Post too close to a nursing mother and a nursing baby. It could cause all kinds of problems. Those are my deep thoughts on airline travel. How about yours? I got a phone number because we're live. The number is 888-688-WALT. That is my phone number, and I am live at 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. And now, for a family that actually has serious problems, they live in a 150-year-old house and they have 8 kids, the Gaffneys.
Hi, it's Dan and Becky Gaffney. We have 8 kids and an old house here in Delaware. Our neighbor, who we'll call Miss T.
Can we call her something that we don't normally call her? We call her Miss T. You can't do that. Like, this was supposed to be, you know, we're just going to talk about it, not really say who she is. If she happens to hear, we'll be nice enough that she gets the point. But you just called her what we actually call her.
She seems like a nice enough lady, but she will not stop driving through our yard completely around into her backyard. She has on-street only parking. So for some reason, she believes she can drive up over the curb, through our lawn,
over our sidewalk as well,
to get to her house.
Which, by the way, not only is the yard have giant divots from where her wheels go every time, but the sidewalk has been broken because she's had contractors there parking their huge equipment on our sidewalk and saying things like, oh, no, this is my yard. You know, that tree's in my yard. Like, for some reason, she can't see the little stake that's right there marking the difference between our yards.
I pointed out to her that that's our property. She doesn't seem to care.
I've asked her to park on the other side because she can fit her car over her sidewalk that she owns. We're responsible where we live for our city sidewalks. We have to pay for them if something happens to them. So she can drive over her sidewalk, park on the other side, but she doesn't want to get her car wet if the other house is draining onto her lawn too closely.
Right. So she just drives through our yard.
Absolutely.
Constantly.
And things like my garden things are in her way. And when you try to gently confront, let's just lay it out there. She has flat out sent me pictures of dead relatives in coffins and said, Becky, this is what I'm dealing with. I don't have time. And then drives up into the yard again because this is her vacation house. Let me just point out that this is where she comes for vacation. So if she can vacation without staring at the dead relatives in coffins, she can certainly find a place to park. Am I right?
Yes. And so now she has contractors there. They're all parking on the lawn. They're tearing off her roof, leaving the stuff laying in the yard for almost 2 weeks now.
Right. And I'm kind of picking things up and chucking it back onto their side, which is what I think led them to when they were tearing off the roof and found a dead squirrel, for them to comically scream and throw it in our yard while the kids were out there like, oh, ah, squirrel.
I'm pretty non-confrontational with this situation, so it's making me feel good that we're talking about it on the air.
Because that's all we can do. We can just sit here and basically, you know, do what people do on Facebook and vaguely talk about, quote, Miss T, which is actually what we call her, and pretend like this is going to get us somewhere. So what's the solution, babe?
Your idea is the best. We got to put a fence all across the front of the yard, right where she has to drive through.
I think we do, but what we're going to have to do first is fix the sidewalk and fix the yard.
Maybe we could put those police stop sticks down and she'll get a flat tire when she goes through.
I thought maybe the contractor's nails would do that, but we weren't that lucky. You know what? If she did get a flat tire, guess who would end up changing it? We would. Because we're suckers, honey. We would change the tire, and then we would probably put in a carport with a concrete pad for her so it never happened again.
Just for her.
Right. So we need to do something besides complain, take a little bit of action, and start working on that fence.
888-688-WALT. That's my phone number. Sharing our deep stories about trouble with the airlines. Every airport in America has been expanded in the past 20 years. It used to be sweet, nice little airports where you'd get off the plane and there was the baggage in Palm Beach or wherever you went. Simple. Fort Lauderdale used to have the best airport. It functioned, but the distances were reasonable. Now every airport has been very proud of the fact they've added a wing. Or more insane, they've added a gourmet restaurant arcade. An arcade of fantastic food, which is nice, but if I time it right, I should get to the airport, get through security, and walk onto the plane with 5 minutes to spare. I'm not going to sit there and eat a four-course meal at an airport. Crazy talk. Trouble at the airport. Things that have made you crazy. A couple things that make me crazy at the airport. One is the insane rules that every rent-a-car company has about returning the car to the rent-a-car place. I have not done that in a long time. I do something decadent. I drive my rent-a-car into the parking garage at the airport closest to my terminal, and then I call them and let them know where the car is. And I leave the keys in the glove compartment. You can come pick it up. I'm not going to go through the hell of taking it back to the rental car return, which is always the wrong exit, far away from the airport as possible, and then getting on a rental car bus and having to be at the airport 2 hours ahead of time to manage the rental car. Don't do that. Nor am I going to deal with the incredibly overpriced magazines. Have you noticed what magazines cost these days? Oh, my gosh. Trouble with travel. This is the busiest travel month of the year. Not the day before Thanksgiving. Right, Mark Simone? Not the day before Thanksgiving. This week is the busiest travel week of the year. You can vent here anonymously. You won't be put on do not fly lists. My number is 888-688-9258. I want to talk to you. 888-688-WALT. You and I don't fit in. We are introverts. My friends who listen to the radio at this time, or you, a midnight misfit, we don't fit in. Do you think the CEO is listening to the radio at this time? No, they're drunk at the country club. They're whining about the golf game that they did today, whining about the bad caddies, all sorts of trouble. It's just you and me in the 18-wheeler, in the passenger car coming back from the lake or the beach. It's our special time alone, 14 inches from the microphone, 14 inches from the speaker. It's just you and me. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Zahi Hawass.
Don't talk to me. Please go away.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Vila Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Violence shuts down Gentlemen's Club. Details later. Strippers on Loose, Sterling at Night.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool. Refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later, Sterling at Night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Colony, New York, just outside of Albany, the home of the Red Envelope Gentleman's Cabaret. First opened at the beginning of this year, the place was jumping. Only dancers on the stage, bar business was brisk, patrons were standing shoulder to shoulder. But then again, the month of May occurred. Richard Snowden is the owner of the Red Envelope, and he is experienced, by the way, in, shall we say, the strip club. He's been owning them for years, and his name is not Italian. Did you notice? Snowden. Yeah, Richard Snowden. No word on a relation to Edward. All right. All of a sudden, there were shots fired in the parking lot. There was big violence in the club. Shots fired again. Business fell off dramatically. Richard Snowden is not just a man who runs strip clubs. He's also a humanitarian. He also has big concern for the safety of his pole dancers, security people, and, of course, the barmaids, and even customers. Richard Snowden said, "No safe place for those people. I'm closing the doors. I'll lose the money and walk away." Our big cities, even places like Albany, have huge problems with crime. Crime leads to businesses being lost. And what happens to these exotic dancers? What happens to the patrons who want to go to the champagne room? What happens to the tax revenue that this wonderful business was bringing to that community? It's gone. It's poof. Got to get this violence under control for the ladies. From the champagne room, this is Vila Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Oh, my gosh. 888-688-WALT. Sharing about the horrors of flying this month, the busiest month of the year. Guarantee your flight will be canceled, delayed, rain delays, but that's minimal. We expect that. What we don't expect is the hell once I get on the plane. I'm going to tell you something that's true. You won't believe me, but there was a time when getting on an airplane was, dare I say it, fun. It was actually fun. The flight attendants were happy to see you. There was room to put your bags. There were some other things on the airplane that have been completely forgotten. There used to be magazines on the airplane and newspapers. And the flight attendants would put those on a cart, take it up and down the aisle before you took off to see if there was anything that you wanted. Not just in first class. Wait, there's more. Coast to coast, there was an actual meal service. And then on United Airlines, there was a flight. Again, you're going to be in shock, called the Delhi flight. Not New Delhi, delicatessen flight. And in each section, in each class, first, business, and coach, there was a buffet set up at the front of the section. And all through the flight, you and I could get up and walk to the deli section of the airline, get whatever we wanted to eat, whatever we wanted to drink. It was spectacular. It wasn't that hard. Is it that hard, Mr. Airline? Is it that hard to do that? And then, if the flight attendants liked you, and they liked me because I wore a suit and did not have on a wedding ring, not because I was conning, but because, I wasn't married. I had on a suit, and I didn't have a wedding ring. I can't tell you how many times on the way out of those planes, a flight attendant would hand me a pillowcase. And in the pillowcase, she had smuggled unopened bottles of wine, treats, desserts, macadamia nuts, not honey peanuts, the worst peanuts possible. They would just sneak them to me. Thanks for being on our airplane. Sometimes the flight attendants in the opening announcements would say my name. And Mr. Sterling's on the flight today. We're very happy that he's on the flight today. I have no idea why they did that, but they would. I felt welcomed. I felt special. Now, if I get on the plane and actually get a seat anywhere near where I wanted, and my one bag can fit under the seat, I feel as though I've had a victory. But the most uncomfortable flight I ever had, which was my problem, was I was seated next to a woman in first class who was nursing her baby. And I hadn't had any kids yet. I wasn't married yet. But I was sitting there on a Saturday morning when I expected to have peace and quiet. You know, a flight on Saturday morning is a sweet flight. And I was expecting peace and quiet. And she was nursing the baby. What does a guy do who doesn't know the nursing woman and is 1 foot from her mouth? What do I do? Where do I look? What do I say? Do I look at her and go, how's everything going? Is the baby happy today? What would I say to her? I said nothing for 3.5 hours. I believe there should be new seats, extra seats for fat people. Let's call it what it is, fat people. A separate section that's soundproofed for kids under 3. And a section to give nursing moms privacy. You've been traveling. How's it going for you? My number is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. We'll take a trip to Alaska coming up in just seconds. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of William Shatner.
Follower down to a bridge by a fountain where rocking horse people.
Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling, live coast to coast. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Dave at 888-688-WALT. You're live on Sterling on Sunday. Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Well, Dave, certainly better now that you're here. I was hoping you could share with us your horror shows about flying.
Well, you know what? I was sitting here waxing my daughter's car in my garage, and the show comes on. Of course, I listen to you every weekend. So it's,
of course you do.
Then all of a sudden, the airline come up, and I worked for TWA, actually. I'm not sure how young you are, but I'm 58 years young. So I started out working at TWA in 1983 in Kansas City as a janitor, and within a year, I was a mechanic. And I knew within a year that the airline industry was in trouble. And I will tell you today, the problem is as you know, nobody works for the airline anymore. That's not a fun job. It isn't like it was in the TWA days where people were jolly and they loved working there. The guy that threw the baggage worked for TWA. The guy that did the tickets did TWA. Everybody worked for TWA. Everybody worked for the airline. They don't do that anymore. Now everybody is subcontracted. So nobody really cares. All they care about is throwing your baggage. There is no pride in working for the airline industry anymore. And that's what's happened. I remember as a mechanic, because I became a mechanic in 1 year. I was a fortunate one that didn't have to have a license back then. I was a mechanic for 14 years. And I remember we would have to add seats. So we started pushing seats forward and adding seats in 1983. And that's where we are today. So the airline industry is a mess because nobody works. There's no pride. There's no fun in it anymore. It's just a day to go to job, and it's no fun.
I suspect that it has been maybe decades since the mechanics and the flight attendants have gotten a raise.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're underpaid, all of them are, and they're underappreciated. But like I say, they don't work for the airline industry anymore, so they work for outside labor. And, you know, who knows who they work for and what they get
right.
paid. It's sure not enough to put up what they put up with. But, you know, working as a mechanic was a breeze. Working as a flight attendant, being yelled at all the time, and flying for 2 weeks at a time, that's not fun.
No. Well, Dave, I appreciate your insight, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for listening to Sterling on Sunday and for calling in to Sterling on Sunday. My phone number live is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. Keith Fons is in North Pole, Alaska. there's actually a town called North Pole, Alaska, which is near Fairbanks. And welcome, Keith. Are you having a zesty day?
I am having a great day. Enjoying this midnight sun we have here this time of the year, and about 80 degrees outside, so it's nice and toasty.
How long are the days now? Actually, how many hours of daylight do you have in Alaska?
Right now, we just hit our summer solstice, and we get about 23 and a half hours a day right now of sunlight.
So now, a stupid lower 48 guy question, how do you sleep? How do you, how does it work? What do you have to do to your bedrooms to make it sleepable?
Well, a lot of people here, you know, what they do is they black out their windows. They'll have either like plastic, like gray reflector paper on their windows, or they use black curtains and try to make their houses nice and dark, because it is kind of awkward, you know, when you're sleeping and it's still bright and the sun's still out, and then you wake up and it's only 2 o'clock in the morning.
Now, because you're a DoorDash driver, Keith Fonz, in Alaska, when it's 23 hours a day of sunlight, there must be much more business, people getting the midnight munchies all day. Is that your experience?
Yeah, but the wintertime, it's about the same, because, like, in the winter, it's opposite. We'll get about 23 and a half hours of straight darkness. So pretty much all year long, either people don't want to go out, you know, in the winter, or in the summer, they're still wide awake because of how bright it is. So pretty much business stays the same all year long.
Now, what about the airlines in Alaska? Do you just have Alaska Air? Is that it?
That's the main one here. We do also have like a private company called Raven that goes in between different villages and different parts of Alaska.
And have you had any trouble on these airlines? Have there been any problems?
On these airlines, I'd say no. I grew up, my dad worked for Continental Airlines for over 20 years. And so as a kid, we used to, you know, some parents take their kids on road trips or camping trips on the weekend. Well, my dad liked to put us on a plane and we would just go take weekend trips. So I've flown a lot, and I would say Alaska Airlines is up there as one of the most courtesy. You know, they very rarely have late flights and all that.
Now, Keith Fonz, who's in North Pole, Alaska, your father used to work for Continental when Gordon Bethune was the CEO. That was a great airline. In its last 5 years before it got acquired by United, it was a great airline. And the minute it got acquired by United, they both sunk. They both went downhill. What'd your dad do at Continental?
He ran different airports for Continental. Like, they're part of the airport. Like, he was in Dulles for many years and Fort Lauderdale, and he just ran, like, pretty much Continental's side of the airport for 20-some years before he ended up retiring.
Which brings up good trivia. Do you know which airport flight attendants dread going to, that they dread taking off from? Do you know which one it is?
I would have to say either Chicago or Dallas.
Fort Lauderdale.
Wow.
Because every Fort Lauderdale flight, no exaggeration, has somewhere between 20 and 30 wheelchairs waiting to get on that plane. And they're all going to New York, and they're all miserable. They have endless complaints that flight attendants hate that run. Did your dad ever mention anything about that?
Nope, nothing like that.
Well, Keith, how's your son? Now, Keith's son was injured in a horrendous bullying accident, and the worst part of the story is the school took no action, has no interest in the story. How is your son healing?
Good. We're hearing less and less about his headaches. Maybe once a week now he'll complain about a headache, but a lot better than it was a month and a half ago, that's for sure.
Keith Fonz, I know you love being on Sterling on Sunday. I love having you on the show. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. My phone number live is 888-688-WALT. Coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to talk to the famous Gary Arnell. Gary Arnell, one of the great talk show hosts of American radio, will be joining us in just seconds. Plus, Randy West. Randy West is the bon vivant, how do you say that, of Hollywood. He has all the gossip, knows all the stuff going on in Hollywood, and he's personally obsessed with the closing of Television City, CBS's Television of City. The man has spent his life obsessing over The Price is Right at Television City, which is being shut down. They're moving it to a different studio. And then the NBC Burbank Studios, where Johnny Carson used to come from, they're being shut down, and they all romanticize how great it was to work there. Really, because I used to be in NBC Board of Directors meetings, and I remember meetings where they said, how are we going to get rid of the rats in Burbank? How do we shut down production on these studios so we can get rid of the rats at Burbank? I saw it from a whole different perspective. It's a whole different thing. You and I should always stay in touch. My email is waltermsterling@gmail, waltermsterling@gmail. And I have a spectacular webpage created by Lee Harris and James Copeland, Walter Sterling Show. There you can find out everything about Florida stories. You can find out everything about our incredible podcast, because, you know, by federal law, I have to have a podcast, which is called Midnight Misfits. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Good evening. It's 11:06 on the East Coast, 8:06 on the West Coast. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. You and I are talking about the horrors of traveling this month, which is the busiest travel month of the year, not the day before Thanksgiving. Here's my phone number. Vent. Get it off of you. If you write to the FAA, it'll do you no good. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. Dr. Dave with your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Cool refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later. Sterling at night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Good evening, I'm Walter Sterling. It's exciting, isn't it, to have a live radio show on Sunday night? It doesn't happen. Usually, what do you've got? The Equity Show, the Gold Show, the Mr. Equity Show. Coming up in just seconds, Randy West will share with us secrets about Wheel of Fortune and about the entire CBS television network moving out of Television City. And secrets about Pat Sajak. Stand by. Lou in New Jersey, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. You're live.
Good evening, Walter. What a pleasure. This is absolutely wonderful. You brought back some fond memories. I began as a stewardess when we were still called, we were called stewardesses in 1973 before being renamed as flight attendants. But you brought back so many fond memories of the Delhi flight. I worked those many times on the DC-10. I knew what you were talking about, the cross aisles. They had the buffet set up, and it was, you're right, come and go. And it was an amazing time, and that's how we earned the friendly skies of United. It was indeed a time that we valued the passengers, and we had fun with them. And like you said, the little goodie bags, they wouldn't send you off. I've done that many times. I had done that. And interestingly enough, and I'm sure you wouldn't know this, but we used to have ghost riders on flights. And those were supervisors from other bases that would check our performance to make sure and to assure that we were passing out magazines, playing cards, plastic wings for the children, and circulating throughout the cabin and not disappearing. And they would address all these issues because passenger service was the hallmark of United Airlines back then, as you recall. And it was just an amazing time. I loved it, and I loved the passengers. And people dressed properly. They didn't come on with their pajamas and flip-flops. So I do remember everything that you're talking about.
Now, Lou, it was always a treat to go coast-to-coast on United or American, because that's when they always rolled it out. And I'm right, aren't I, that there were like three different choices for dessert. There was butterscotch sundaes, hot fudge sundaes, and strawberry sundaes. There was always a variety of desserts.
That is correct. We had a cart.
And no one believes me. And then I will tell you the most decadent story about United Airlines. Are you ready?
Well, we had the roasts. I mean, you know the menus. We had the roast to ask what your specific cut was, how you wanted it done. And we had the champagne. It was just an amazing time. And customer service was what it was about. And they were so strict with us. We had wait standards where we had to be weighed in the first 3 weeks of the month. We had to pick one day to get weighed in. That's how strict they were with appearance standards and our weight.
Well, Lou, it's almost pornographic what you're saying to me now. People, I'm so glad you brought it up, Lou. Thank you very much for calling, because nobody believes me when I share these stories and more coming up in just seconds. Now, Randy West is in Hollywood with a scoop about Wheel of Fortune and about abandoning CBS Television City. That's coming up in seconds. I'm Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Will Ferrell.
I'm listening to what you're asking me, and if you're not listening to my answers, let's just call it a day.
Sterling on Sunday, good evening. Randy West is the Zelig of Hollywood. Every photo taken in Hollywood over the past 15 years, Randy West is in the photo. I don't know how you do it, Randy, but it's very impressive. You want to sign up to Randy West's Facebook page, Randy West, spelled exactly the way you think, not with a stupid I, he's not a stripper, Randy West. Randy's just come out with a book. We'll share the title of that book coming up in just seconds because it's a picture book. Even you and I can understand this book. Randy, two big pieces of news. Pat Sajak at 95 has decided to retire, and they're shutting down CBS Television City. Please share your thoughts with us.
You know, this has been the Mount Rushmore of television game shows. The Price is Right has done 51 years from the same studio. Pat Sajak has done 41 years. The executives are going crazy because these are comfort food. That's how they refer to these shows. They're consistent. They're regular. They're there when you know it and feel like you want to come back home to the womb. But it's all changed at once. Now, the Pat Sajak story, he just announced he's retiring in 1 year. Nothing new there because he only signed 2 years a year ago. A man who signed 3 years at a time was ready to retire, and Sony said, well, Jeopardy has just lost Alex Trebek. We have two hosts. We can't even make sense of that. Please don't leave us now. We're in the lurch. Instead of 3 years, he signed for two. He finished one. He's got one more year to go, and, you know, he's chomping at the bit. He really wanted to be out a year ago. But what will happen at Wheel of Fortune? Everybody's throwing their hat in the ring because of $15 million a year job appeals to everybody. So Whoopi Goldberg has been saying that she wants to do it. But that's reminiscent of when Rosie O'Donnell wanted to do the Price is Right show and wanted to take it from six games down to three and put live music in. CBS said no to that. So will Vanna stay with Wheel of Fortune? She told me she'll leave when Pat leaves. But you know what? Sony's trying to keep her, too, for consistency. Consistency. There are people on the planet who have never known life without Wheel of Fortune and Price is Right. So Price is Right. CBS has sold Television City. The five-year transition period is ending soon, and the people who run The Price is Right, Fremantle, have bought their own studio. Why pay rent when you can own? When CBS paid the rent, it didn't matter. Now they have their own studio, and everybody's wondering, will people feel alienated by the new look? And it will look different. The audience will have 171 people instead of 330. The stage will look entirely different. I don't want to give too much information, but if you want to see the last Price is Right show after 51 years in that same studio, it airs tomorrow morning. They will be saying goodbye to Studio 33 at Television City tomorrow morning with some special programming. So it's a period of flux that we haven't seen in game shows for decades, literally. Literally decades. And the executives are nervous. The fans, the super fans, they're going crazy. What does the new studio look like? What's going to happen? You know, Let's Make a Deal is moving also from their home. So it's transition like we've never seen before. When you talk about who wants to host it, well, Whoopi Goldberg is reminiscent of what Rosie O'Donnell wanted to do.
Do you remember mm-hmm. what Bob Barker said when Rosie said she wanted to host it? Do you remember what Bob Barker said?
I don't think he said anything. I think he rolled his eyes and CBS people.
He did. And what he did was put a nasty jinx on CBS executives. He said, well, Rosie O'Donnell would be a good choice unless CBS executives don't want a woman host.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe
he said it more than once. I couldn't believe he did that to them, because she would have been a fine talent. A woman host would be more than fine, but not Rosie.
Right. Well, what you need is a special breed, somebody who isn't a star, a broadcaster like yourself, who understands that the content of the show and the guests on the show are the stars. It's very difficult to take some money off of a comedy stand-up stage or an acting career and have them play second fiddle to all these civilians. It's an unnatural act, but you understand it, and Bob Barker did it better than anyone ever before. Pat Sajak does an episode of Wheel of Fortune. You never hear him mention anything about himself, his life, his impressions, his feelings about anything until the last 20 minutes, just before the 20 seconds, I should say, before the credits roll. Then he and Vanna have a couple of words, but it's not about the host. So all these people who are lining up for $15 million a year, you know what? None of them are truly qualified, in my opinion.
Now, the $15 million a year comes with a very interesting workload. Please share with us, Randy, how often they actually work to tape Wheel of Fortune.
It's sinful to admit. They do six shows a day, and there are two tape days a week, and then you get to go wherever you want to go for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you come back, and this continues maybe for 4 tape days a month for maybe 4 months, 5 months. Bing, bang, boom.
Now, Randy West was an announcer on The Price is Right. You worked for a while as the announcer on The Price is Right.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, what was that like?
Bob Barker, the one and only.
What was that like, being the announcer on The Price is Right? How hard is that job? And I've always wondered, are there actual rehearsals for that show? Because it seems like a very complicated show.
It's very complicated staging. It's like the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall, and you rehearse the show just before it airs. You do it in reverse. You do the showcases, which is the last thing on the show. You rehearse those first, so when the prizes go out into the hallway in reverse order, you're ready to do the show from the top again. This was a well-oiled machine, as I say, 51 years. What was it like? It was like working without a net, and I don't mean like a beach movie with Annette Funicello. I mean it's like a high-wire trapeze act, because there is no editing. Bob Barker did that show as if it were live. He remembers live television before there was videotape. And it ran to time. There was no post-production, nothing. So if I said whatever came out of flying out of my mouth incorrectly, that was it. That was it. What I said was out across the air, unless I said something really outrageous. So you have to learn how to cover your mistakes and how to, you know, deal with the fumbles. And it's a lot of reading of a lot of copy. And when I got the job, the first thing Bob Barker said to me was, you know what, you talk more on this show than I do, because all those prize plugs. It's fascinating to work with Barker.
I often have had Randy Thomas on, the woman who's the voice of the Emmys, the Oscars, the Academy Awards, the Kennedy Center Honors. And I said to her, I said, Randy, how much of your announces are pre-recorded? And she said, about 10%, because there's some very specific things. I said, how come you never make a mistake? And she said, because I read those scripts for weeks at a time before it goes on the air. I know those scripts inside out. I have rehearsed them in my home 100 times before I go on the air. I thought it was like some native gift she had. No, no, she rehearsed. That's how she did it, Randy. Now, tell us about the evacuation of Burbank, NBC, and of Television City. How big a shift is this going to be in the television production world in Los Angeles?
Well, the production community is 96% occupancy rate in sound stages. They're building them as quickly as they can. They're knocking down the Warner Ranch, which had the house from Bewitched and Blondie and all these great television shows that we remember. They're all being knocked down in the next few weeks to build more sound stages. We're out of room because of all these streaming shows. More television now. There are 600 television shows in one stage of pre or post-production or shooting right now. And it's an incredible load. And, you know, you mentioned Randy Thomas. She's brilliant, but she's just the best at it. But, you know, she's working live, too. And it's an amazing feat to listen to somebody who knows how to do it. The secret I learned for it came from Johnny Olson, the original announcer on The Price is Right. He showed me how to mark copy. It's like music on a staff, you know what I mean? Like notes. He showed me his markings, and once you do that, there's no way you can screw it up. And I know Randy marks her copy as well, and she's got somebody sitting with her, as I do when I do the Emmy Awards, who helps her with pronunciations just before the mic goes live. It's more of an adrenaline thrill than anything in the world. But your question was about the studios. CBS sold Television City. They sold their Radford lot. They sold Black Rock in New York. They just put on sale the West Side of Manhattan Broadcast Center. They're out of the real estate business, and shows are running from one place to another because it's a cosmic shift in the finances.
Randy West, what's the name of your book?
TV Inside Out, Flukes, Flakes, Feuds, Felonies. I love it. Flukes, Flakes, Feuds, and Felonies, stories you never heard before, and that only the insiders are aware of and dare not speak of because they involve embarrassing stories. But it's true that we're only human, and some of these folks who are on television are even more human. You know, it's living with people who are living outside of the box. And I don't mean just the TV box. They think and live outside the box. TV Inside Out, Flukes, Flakes, Feuds, Felonies at TVRandyWest.com or Amazon or Barnes & Noble and all those good places.
I will post those links on the Walter Sterling Facebook page and the Walter M. Sterling Twitter page. Now,
I have
Randy,
to know how many people curse you. How many people curse you Monday morning because you keep them up Sunday night with a live and interesting radio show?
You're very kind. Now I know how you get yourself into every photograph. Now, Randy,
yes.
Randy, the reason that CBS and NBC or whoever owns it now, Comcast, is selling that real estate, it's a mistake, number one, and they will regret it. And it's being done because if you're an MBA, a Wharton MBA, and now you're in charge, you can show a tremendously improved balance sheet by getting rid of that real estate. But any time in the history of broadcasting that I've known a major facility is offloaded off of the balance sheet, they regret it. Do the producers you know go, this is a mistake?
Yes. Yes, you don't change things. And as far as the balance sheets go, you know from your work at NBC that this is a fight to make the shareholders happy. Every quarter, you get a report card, and people want to see the stock price go up. And you do whatever you have to do, it seems, sometimes. And offloading real estate? Yeah, sure, we'll take that off the books. If it gives us cash, suddenly our streaming business doesn't show a big loss. Because you do know that all these streaming shows are all operating at a loss. All of them.
They have to be operating at a loss. When I see the cable numbers for Fox News and CNN, I'm like, wait a minute. If I was the program director of WINS in New York and I only showed 230,000 adults 25 to 54, I'd be fired. It's astonishing to me how miserable the numbers are for those cable channels relative to dominant radio stations like KMOX and KFBK. It's amazing. Randy West, you're a good friend of the show. I look forward to being on the West Coast once again in my life, and it's a real privilege. I will put the name of your book up on the Walter M. Sterling Twitter page and on the Walter Sterling Facebook page. Randy West,
you're
thank you
gentleman.
So much.
Thank you. You've been a dear friend, Walt. Appreciate it, my friend. Be well.
You got it. Well, good evening. I'm Walter Sterling, and you and I are talking about our life in the airports, trouble in the airports, trouble on the airplanes. It gets worse. It just keeps getting worse. And then the airlines wonder, why are passengers so impolite? Why are they so unruly? They're so unruly and impolite because of the miserable, horrible service that we get. Let's talk about it. 888-688-9258. 888-688-WALT. 888-688-WALT. And I look forward to talking to you live. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by the words of Gunk.
Join me next time when I go back in time again. Not in an exciting way like in a film. I'm probably just looking at some old pots or something.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Hool. Refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later, Sterling at night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
You know what I'm doing right now? I'm eating raw cookie dough. I'm not eating the cookie dough that it says bake or eat. You know, those new packages that are out now called Bake or Eat. No, I'm just eating raw cookie dough. Don in St. Louis, welcome to Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-WALT. You're live on the radio coast to coast, Don. How does that feel?
It feels fine. I got to disagree with you on so many points. Number one, the airlines and the people running it and all that. I think they do a pretty good job. And the reason being is because that on many flights, the problem is people do not respect each other. There's no courtesy anymore. You know, you have kids kicking the back of your seat. You have somebody next to you take their shoes off and they clip their toenails. I mean, I can't even tell you the stupid stuff, but I'm saying that it's unbelievable for what they have to deal with. That's above and beyond. I'm not saying they don't delay flights, they don't overbook. You know, I don't agree with that stuff, but people in general have lost their mind on being kind, courteous, and having manners. That's absolutely number one. And then the other thing is, if you were talking about somebody nursing their kid, I mean, unless you're 12 years old, who cares if she's nursing your kid? If she's trying to be discreet, nursing your kid, it's a natural act. You don't have to say anything to her if she's sitting next to you, as long as she's being respectful. So why would that bother you? It's just normal. So you don't have to say anything. It's not, I don't think it's, I don't know. It's not something you shouldn't do. It's fine. I mean, we're not 12 years old. She has a kid. She's nursing him. Who cares? As long as she's not being, like, flagrant about it or whatever, you know? So that's all I have to say. So
you can Don, tell me. Don, thank you for calling Sterling on Sunday, 888-688-WALT. Gary Arnell, a very famous talk show host in Philadelphia and New York City. Gary Arnell only works top five cities. In fact, a few times he was offered jobs in market number six, and he said, no, I'm Gary Arnell. I only share my information with people in the major markets, Philadelphia being market number five. That's as low as he'll go. Now, Gary Arnell, I understand on your Saturday show, which has aired not enough hours on WPHT in Philadelphia, that you had a very interesting theory about what should happen with Vladimir Putin and Philadelphia being a sanctuary city.
Yes, my theory was that Philadelphia became a sanctuary city, Walter, and I didn't realize this, how long ago was 2014. Today it's known as a caring city because it's trying to be politically correct as much as it can on both sides. So my theory is if this coup d'etat put together by Yevgeny Prigozhin was successful and Vladimir Putin needed a place for refuge, he needed to get out. He was already on the run, Walter, already on the run. Why not Philadelphia welcoming Vladimir Putin into the sanctuary and or slash caring city that it is now known as? I mean, you know, we got the immigrants coming here from Florida and DeSantis, from Abbott in Texas and so forth. Why not have Vladimir Putin come to Philadelphia? Now, I will tell you, when I put that out there on the Saturday Arnell show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, there were a couple of people, this is what is so interesting about this, Walter, from a political standpoint, that they were more concerned with Philly being known as a sanctuary city than any concern exhibited over the fact that we might be welcoming the dictator himself, Vladimir Putin, into the city itself. Look, we're a sanctuary city. Yes, Mr. Putin is welcome to come to this city. It was just incredible. It was just unbelievable. So it was crazy. And by the way, Walter, I just wanted to let you know one other thing. When you said that I've been doing stuff in top five markets, I was contemplating, I heard your conversation with Randy West. I loved it, by the way. West is great. And I was contemplating whether or not I should audition for the host job at Wheel. And then I thought to myself, am I guaranteed that this is going to be in a top five market, which it is now, but am I guaranteed that it will be there for the next 5 years? When they couldn't give me that guarantee, Walter Sterling, I'm out, baby. I am out.
Star of your status, Gary Arnell, that makes perfect sense.
Please.
It makes perfect sense. You should be the host of Wheel of Fortune. It makes all the sense in the world. Gary Arnell, what times are you on WPHT? Eastern time, when are you on?
Eastern time, 3 to 5 p.m., Saturday afternoon, Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And you can catch me, get my website, too. It's GaryArnell.com, GaryArnell.com. Lots of stuff on there, podcasts and to appear. And, Walter, I thank you for your tutelage and your guidance through my entire career as well, because you have been you've been there for me. You've been really that guiding light, and I appreciate it. So,
Gary, my tutelage has taken you from full-time afternoon drive to 2 hours on Saturdays. So I'd be very careful.
You know what? You got to remember this, though, Walt. It's in a top five market, baby. It's in a top five market.
You're the top five guy.
And you don't care. No, That's it.
Thanks very much, Mr. Arnell, for being on Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, we're going to hear about a true entrepreneur, a gentleman who took the gutsy risk of leaving a big fat job, the kind you have, and going into business for himself. That's in seconds. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Liza Schlesinger.
Gentlemen, let's say you get a girl to go home with you, all right? Let's say you get a girl to go back to your apartment by the grace of God.
888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. We're live on a Sunday night. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Jim Fishback. Now, Jim is a very unusual person in my life in that he's my boss. He is my boss. He owns an affiliate. He owns a radio station. But his story of how he got to be the owner of a radio station to me is fascinating. Now, I notice there are many different monikers for your radio station. So, Jim, what should we call your radio station?
Well, I'm going back to the original called, you know, the original history, WGGH.
And the city of license, sir?
Marion, Illinois.
And what is that near?
Interstate 57, Carbondale, where Southern Illinois University is. There's a lot of people that have been through SIU that are famous now.
Now, Jim Fishback, you were working for a big company, right? A huge company.
Yes, sir.
And you decided you wanted to own this radio station that you had admired since you were a kid. What year did that happen?
2007.
What took you to the edge of the cliff? What made you think, you know, this is it. I'm going to quit this safe job, and I'm going to own a radio station. What was going through your head?
And that really was what it was like. It was like standing on the edge of a tall building looking down and being terrified. But at the time, I had a good woman by my side, and I had the passion and drive, and it was one of my life goals. The opportunity presented itself. There was a guy that was wanting to sell the station pretty badly, and the stars aligned, the universe lined up, and here I am, just paid it off.
You just paid it off. You got a bank loan to do it, right? You got a bank loan to do it?
Oh, yeah, a few. And some help with the city revolving loan. The city's really kind of been behind me and backed me, and I had a lot of friends in the right places. But bank loans, city revolving loan. Let's see, what am I forgetting? But anyway, the business loans that you get.
Well, Jim Fishback, I can't get a MasterCard. How did you get a loan to buy a radio station, which allegedly no bank wants to get anywhere near?
I have excellent credit, and have always upheld that. And had a few things that happened around that time that there was some money on hand. I had some national voiceover gigs and things that I was looking good, and I'd had a pretty good run with the large company, done some syndication and stuff. So a lot of stuff worked out to where I was in a good shape to at least make a down payment.
Now that you own a radio station, share with us, and that you're working for yourself, that you're a true entrepreneur, two or three things that have surprised you now that you work for yourself. What are some things you did not expect, Jim?
Well, first of all, it was about a week in that I realized that I had to clean the toilets.
Yeah.
I thought it was I'm gonna play radio. I'm gonna do whatever I want. Second of all, I realized I have more bosses now than ever. The people that work for me that I don't want to run off. The listeners that you gotta take care of. Of course, all the clients that advertise on your station, they're all bosses. Yeah, the people that work for you can be bosses because again, you don't want to run those people off. So you gotta work with them and you gotta take advice sometimes that maybe you don't want to take.
Now, Jim Fishback, now that you're a boss and you don't want to get the people working for you to run off, have you ever had that Friday where you're like, I don't know how I'm going to meet payroll? Have you ever had that week?
I'm going to be honest with you. I've always had other people worry about the money and the things. So, not so much. I did have to fire myself. That's one of the other things that I was going to tell you. I guess the third is that a few years ago, I realized I couldn't pay myself, and I had a good GM there that knew what he was doing with sales, and I'm not great at sales, and I knew that I would totally run the place in the ground if I didn't get rid of myself, so I fired me, and he's still there, and it worked out well, and I went to work for other people.
How much day-to-day involvement as the owner in the radio station, how much day-to-day do you get involved? If I were to ask your general manager versus what you just said, if I were to say to the general manager, hey, listen, Jim come around a lot? Does he still poke around? What would your general manager say?
No, I really hardly bother him at all.
Are you the voice of the station?
I do some production, and I do a Sunday night. Right before you, I lead into your show. I do an 80s show just for the heck of it. I do some voice work for the station. I have a few other big voice guys, though.
Who are the other voice guys?
I tell you, Jeff Lawrence is one. And rest is so I've had... I wanted to get I had Dick Ervesty before he passed away. Rest his soul.
All right, so
I have Jeff Lawrence now. I wanted to get Charlie Van Dyke, which somehow you managed, but I never was able to get him nailed down.
Did you call him?
Yeah, I reached out to him. I think I emailed him, and he said, well, get in touch with my people. And I don't think he was kind of expensive.
Well,
he should be.
Well, Jim is referring to the big voice guy that you hear on Sterling on Sunday, the guy with the very big voice. That's Charlie Van Dyke, and it's a very interesting thing about Charlie. Charlie makes all of his money with 32 television stations. Each afternoon at about 2 p.m., he does the teases for Eyewitness News. That's what he does. He does the teases for Eyewitness News at 32 stations, and he is so expensive that many of those TV stations only use him during television sweep months where they gather the ratings. The rest of the time, they can't afford him. They only use him during sweep months. That's how good Charlie is. And he has, in order to manage his time, he really doesn't do radio stations anymore. And, Jim, I will tell you this. This is a radio fact. I'm still in shock. The reason he does voice work on Sterling on Sunday, and the same reason Randy Thomas does voice work on this show, is I am so blessed they heard the show, got in touch with me and said, how can I help you? I'm like, holy crow, these guys want to be on my show. I'd just be embarrassed. I'm usually embarrassed to be on the show. Now, Jim, you need to be on the show. So if I send you a couple lines of script, will you make me an MP3 and I can put you on this show?
Sure.
That would be great. Jim Fishback, brave entrepreneur, thank you so much for carrying Sterling on Sunday. Thank you for calling in to Sterling on Sunday. And thanks for being with me tonight. Thank you so much, Jim. All right, it's Sterling on Sunday, live on the radio, and you and I should always stay in touch. I have a Twitter feed because by federal law, all radio people need to help the Twitter business. Isn't that a piece of work? Walter M. Sterling, that's the Twitter handle, Walter M. Sterling. And on Facebook, those of you who are over a certain age, say 30, love Facebook. And that's Walter Sterling, just Walter Sterling. And you will see pictures of my fabulous family and my mistress and all sorts of excitement. Plus, on the webpage, Walter Sterling Show, you can learn how we make Florida stories and who makes the Florida stories. And really, are you aware of any other radio show that shares with you the infrastructure, the secret infrastructure of how it gets made? No, you don't. I answer every email that comes in, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Coming up in just seconds, the Midnight Misfit Time, Sterling on Sunday.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Hool. Refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later, Sterling at night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
The Mennonites' belief and understand on the topic of sex and marriages have major similarities with that of the early Jewish people. Sex is the woman's right, not the man's. A man has a duty to give his wife sex regularly and to ensure that sex is pleasurable for her. he is also obligated to watch for signs that his wife wants sex, and to offer it to her without her asking for it. The woman's right to sexual intercourse is one of a wife's three basic rights. The others are food and clothing.
Mennonites, tonight's Midnight Misfits. Dave Scott, expert on UFOs and all things paranormal. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday, Dave, a true Canadian.
Pleasure to be with you. How you doing?
Well, Dave, I'm always excited to speak with you. Do you have any updates that we need to know from the world of UFOs and your other secret friends?
Well, the big update is coming out of Canada, believe it or not, and that is that the United States has been playing a game with Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the UK about hiding alleged crash retrievals of UFOs. Now, I thought this would be interesting for you tonight because, you know, there's some big debate going on there about what kind of technology the United States may have regarding UFOs and everything that goes along with it. Well, a Canadian politician by the name of Larry McGuire sent a letter out back in March to Canadian Defense Minister Anita Anand asking about this crash retrieval program that is allegedly going on between the five countries, and to actually come out and speak about what she knows regarding this phenomena. And I thought this is kind of interesting because there have apparently been crashes of UFOs in Canada that have been turned over to the United States, including one in northern Manitoba, which is in central Canada, and that happened in the late 50s or 60s. And it goes along with all the rumors that we're hearing out of the United States from whistleblowers like David Grush, that the United States is in possession of UFOs and their pilots.
David Scott, this has always been a mystery to me. If a UFO can come from another solar system or another planet or another time frame, how the heck do they crash on Earth? What is causing them to crash?
Well, here's the interesting part. David Grush, a former member of the UAP Task Force, which is now a program called Arrow at the Pentagon, he has since retired. He stated that the United States had craft both in full tact and ones that have crashed. Now, the ones that have crashed, I mean, it could be something that an alien, you know, was letting his teenagers drive around and crash into a tree or a mountain or something. I don't know. But it could also be that their aircraft are not used to the atmosphere that we're in with oxygen. They may not be used to that. And that is one of the mysteries that we have regarding this. I think it's more interesting, Walt, that we have the ability to say that we have full intact craft. Were those traded? Were those given to the United States regarding UFOs? This is where it gets real interesting in the conspiracy.
How would we get intact UFO spaceships? How would that happen? And I understand why Canada would quickly give us any UFOs that landed in Canada because we build their cars.
Yes, you build our cars that are made in Ontario, so do the Mexicans, so we can't forget that either. But you know what? That is the million-dollar question, Walt, and that is something that we are all trying to figure out, is what would be the cause of them having not only spacecraft fully intact, but the pilots as well. Because remember, something has to be flying these things. Okay, if they're not from Russia, they're not from China or some foreign adversary, and the United States government knows that they are from a foreign world, whether that's from outer space or a different dimension, something has to be flying them. And according to David Grush, we have pilots of these craft, which I think has gone very mute within the mainstream media regarding this topic. That means we've got aliens. We've got aliens somewhere, whether they're dead from a crash or whether they are alive, and we've made a trade some of their technology for ours, or, you know, there's a big conspiracy that we've traded technology for humans so they could do tests on humans. There is a lot going on right now within the UFO community trying to figure out what that exact question really means.
What's the name of your website?
SpacedOutRadio.com.
And SpacedOutRadio.com, if I want to write you an email, how do I do that?
It's real simple. info@spacedoutradio.com gets a hold of me.
Dave Scott, always a great guest on Sterling on Sunday. Thank you very much for being with us live on a Sunday night, live. Here you and I are in the 18-wheeler. What a privilege to be with you in that cab with the glow of that dashboard. I love 18-wheeler dashboards. I love those cabs because the lighting is just perfect. And you have all of these secret toggle switches that light up that I'm fascinated by. And then, of course, you get tired, you can sleep in the back. That's not a bad deal. My phone number is 888-688-WALT. I need your advice on something important coming up in just seconds. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of George Santos.
No, I don't consider the things I've said to be lies. They're what my great-grandfather, Winston Churchill.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. For our first Florida story, we're going to Doral, Florida, or Doral, but I think you're going to feel the same way as I do. I feel like we're missing a lot of interesting details here.
More than 48 hours after a fire ignited at a waste-to-energy facility in Doral, smoke is still seen billowing from the plant. New images from Sky 10 shows a gigantic hole in the roof of one of the buildings on the property off Northwest 97th Avenue. It's the only waste-to-energy facility in the county, and it processes more than 1 million tons of waste annually.
Yeah, so what are they talking about? What I do understand is that there's some sort of trash, just the vague concept of trash, that is being taken through this facility. The other notable thing is how big the buildings are. And you understand how when you see giant buildings that look like it's like an Amazon distribution center, like one of those big Walmart distribution centers, this is how big the buildings are. And if that thing's on fire in the middle, how do you get a hose to it? Well, you can't. And I did a little more reading trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And the nearest I can tell is there's actually a streak going on right now in America of landfills catching on fire. And actually, this is starting to happen in other countries, too. And the thought is the culprit is these lithium ion batteries. I'm no Walter White level chemist or whatever, but all these little batteries that are in your cell phone and your laptop and your smartwatch. And one of the big culprits that makes this a very Florida sniffing subject is one of the big culprits is vape pens. That's right. Vape pens, the batteries that after they're thrown away, a lot of times they still have juice left in them, and if they get pushed and stay on, they can ignite, and they're causing landfill fires, and it's somewhat of an epidemic. I'll keep an eye on it for you, but that's kind of cool, or gross, or both.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Everything changed when Eaton Patz went to his bus one morning and disappeared. He was 6 or 7 years old. It was in Soho, before Soho became gentrified in New York City. And Eaton Patz, for the first time, walked from his apartment about a block to the bus and disappeared. Never found him. Many suspects never found him. That was the first time he walked alone. From that moment in the 1970s, when that moment happened, everything changed in the suburbs. Everything changed. I know families that will not let their kids play in their own backyard unless they're sitting on the back porch watching them. That's how much it's changed. Go out and ride your bike. Come back when it's dark. No, that doesn't happen. Spend a dinner at a friend's house and then come home and say, by the way, I was at dinner at a friend's house. That doesn't happen. It's all changed. Next door to us, we moved to this house. I do the show from my laundry room. Yes, my friend who plays bingo in Delaware, I really do it in my laundry room. My 11-year-old was befriended by a next-door neighbor, a woman who is, in fact, a licensed public school teacher. very young and very friendly. And my 11-year-old believes the world is her friend. I don't want to dissuade her of that necessarily, but so now the next-door neighbor gave her a gift, a plaster of Paris blank bas-relief that a kid can paint. So she brought that home, and she started to paint that. And then the other day she comes home, and she has a cupcake. I said, where'd you get this cupcake from? From our neighbor. The only rule that I've given her about the neighbor is you are never, ever, ever to go into that house. Their backyard is not sealed off. It's an open backyard. Ours is an open backyard. I can see what's going on there, but I can't watch her all the time. And she's 11, and she's made this friend. I want to tell this friend that they're not to give my kid any food unless I know. And they're not to give the kid any toys unless I know. And say to my kid, listen, why don't you ask your parents if you can have this? Why don't you ask your parents if you can have this? And I want to tell them that. I want to tell this woman next door what I just said to you, that the kid has to be able to say, I have to ask my parents if it's okay. That's what I need to do. I am afraid to do it because it could come out the wrong way. She could become hostile toward my child. They could stop being friends. This is a friendship my kid enjoys. I don't know how to say it because I am from Manhattan. In Manhattan, all of these unspoken rules were taken care of. Your kid was never alone. Your kid was never without you or a babysitter or another real adult. Not a pretend adult, a real adult. Moving to the suburbs has just caused me an endless string of hell. Starting with, how the heck do you light this barbecue that I never wanted? Your suggestions, your advice on what to say to this neighbor, public school teacher, professional young woman who's befriended my child, gave her a cupcake, gave her a toy. Because you see, the way my kid's brain works is she's so trusting that she will generalize that any adult that looks sort of like this next-door neighbor and gives her a toy, it's okay. Any adult that sort of looks like the next-door neighbor and gives her a cupcake, it's okay. And it's not okay. I don't want to poison her against the world. I don't want to make her jaundiced against the world. And maybe I'm being naive. What would you do? What would you do? My number is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. 888-688-9258. And the other big problem I've got in the suburbs is that I looked out the window at the trash cans the other day, and there was a raccoon. And the raccoon saw me and took off. About a half hour later, I hear rumbling in the trash cans again. I look out, and there's a skunk. Beautiful skunk, by the way, but a skunk. And they're geniuses at knocking over trash cans and geniuses at ferreting out the food that they want. There's my first problem every morning. Have the trash cans been knocked over? Half the time they've been knocked over. It's about half the time. I never wanted to put out my own trash. I don't understand how this works. In the town I grew up in, which was in Maplewood, New Jersey, we did not put out the trash cans. We put them in trash. These were holders built in the patio and the backyards. They disappeared. You put them in the holders in the hole. They disappeared. The trash people came to your backyard and took it out of this hole and threw it away. You never saw them. It was the elegant, proper system. But, oh, my God, these are the many challenges I have of living in the suburbs. The other problem is that I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to spend any time with you. I don't want to go to your backyard. I don't want to hang out with you. Because inevitably, when I'm in a conversation with another parent, another guy, parent, they only talk about two things. They're bankers, lawyers, doctors. Okay, that leaves me out. And they talk about sports. I don't know anything about sports. I don't understand sports. I don't fit in. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday. I enjoy being with you. But what should I say to my next-door neighbor who offers my kid food and offers my kid friendship? Oh, and labor. Hey, why don't you hang out in our backyard and help me plant this flower garden? I don't want my kid helping her plant the flower garden. I want her helping me plant a flower garden, which, by the way, would never happen. If I said to my kid, my 11-year-old daughter, if I said, come and help daddy plant the flower garden. No, I'm very busy right now. What are you doing? I'm playing Roblox. I'm playing Minecraft. I'm playing Sims. She's very busy with these things. And then she watches hours and hours of these horrible Roblox cartoons, this anime on Roblox, anime. I have yet to figure out how to set the iPhone, her iPhone, to so that it shuts down. That's what I have to do. So that it shuts down like at 9 o'clock at night, and that's it. 888-688-WALT. It's the Midnight Misfit time of Sterling on Sunday, and I love being with you at this time because there's no one else. This is it, you know. No one else is live at this time. You think there's anyone else live at this? Don't be silly. Every single disc jockey you like on those FM stations right now, they were drunk at Ruby Tuesdays on Tuesday afternoons, and then they're asleep now. The boss from the country club, she's asleep now. So it's just you and me. It's the best time to be on the radio. It's the best time. Everything, anything I share with you, any information I share with you about a product, it'll be sold. That's the best thing about being on the radio at this time. Plus, I get the best emails. I get the best phone calls, and I'm grateful for that. What should I do with the next door neighbor who keeps giving my kid little gifts, assignments, and she's a school teacher, you know? She's not, like, totally scary, but that dynamic scares me because my child's brain will generalize that if any other adult gives her a cupcake or a toy, it's okay because this nice lady next door gave her a cupcake and a toy. Therefore, it must be okay. I need your advice, please. My phone number is 888-688-9258, 888-688-WALT. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of iCarly.
Guys, always tell girls to calm down, and it never works. It just gets us all whipped up. You see me all whipped up now? It's because you told me to calm down!
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool. Refuge at one place for the criminal kind. The people of Walmart. Details later, Sterling at night.
I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell a story of an international auto theft ring that was shipping stolen vehicles to Shanghai, which eventually led to multiple homicides. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Coming up, you're going to hear episode 165 of Florida Stories. There was only 98 episodes of Gilligan's Island, only 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and we're about to pass Seinfeld, which had 180 episodes, which puts us in such rare broadcast elite territory as the great Beverly Hills 90210 with 293 episodes. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'm going to talk about an international car theft ring that led to multiple homicides. So in the late 90s, early 2000s, we were getting killed with the theft of Audi A6s. Usually when you have a spike in stolen vehicles, they're going to turn up somewhere. They're going to turn up chopped. They're going to turn up in pieces. You're going to arrest people driving these cars because they're a hot ticket item. Back then, these vehicles were just disappearing off the face of the earth. If that wasn't bad enough, surrounding counties in New York like Westchester, Rockland, and even in New Jersey, over a weekend, car dealerships were getting hit where 10, 15 Audis were getting swiped at a time. So we knew that at some point these vehicles were being shipped out of the country because they were just vanishing off the face of the earth. We got a break in the case with a bad guy got arrested up in Rockland County trying to boost a car out of the Palisades Mall. He was on lifetime parole in Florida, so he started spilling his guts. What he explained to us was there were Chinese nationals out in Brooklyn that met a Jamaican middleman. The Chinese were paying the Jamaican middleman $5,000 an Audi. The Jamaican middleman was farming out the thefts to his different car theft rings in the Bronx. The Jamaican middleman would pay the thieves between $500 and $1,000 a vehicle. The vehicles were stolen, parked on the street for a couple of days, let them cool off to make sure they didn't have a GPS or a tracking device. Then the vehicles would be brought out to Brooklyn first thing in the morning, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. There was this warehouse in Brooklyn in a busy financial district. The gate would go open, 2-3 stolen Audis would go inside, and the gate would close. Inside, there were Chinese nationals that were driving 2 stolen Audis per shipping container. They would let the air out of the tires so the vehicles would sit low, and then they would build a wooden platform above it where they would hoist another 1 or 2 vehicles per shipping container. So each shipping container contained between 3 and 4 stolen Audis. Later, a trucking company would pick up the containers, take them out to Newark, New Jersey, where they were placed on trains. They were railed across the United States. They were loaded on shipping cargo ships in Long Beach, California, and then the vehicles were sent out to Shanghai. We went up on wiretaps on the Asian phones where we were finding out the finances behind this, and we had multiple wiretaps on our thieves. And what we quickly realized is our thieves that lived in the Bronx were in the murder-for-hire business. They were talking about whacking this guy and whacking that guy. So eventually, when we were able to take down this international car shipping ring, we were able to solve between 13 and 15 homicides in addition to all these stolen vehicles going back to China. And in case you're wondering, no, we weren't able to get any of the vehicles back. So that's the closest case I worked on, which was like the movie Gone in
888-688-WALT. That's my phone number. And if you and I want to get together by email, I answer every email, waltermsterling@gmail. waltermsterling@gmail. I answer every single email. Don't I, Karen with the cats? Don't I, Neil Paul? There you go. And Judy Paul, welcome to Sterling on Sunday, my midnight misfits. This is the best time of year and the only time of year that it makes sense to me to live in the suburbs. Because the best thing about a good suburb is that it has a great park system. That's the one thing that binds them. They have a great park system from Shaker Heights to the suburbs of Boston to New Jersey to California. Great park systems. And one night, I was in a suburb of New Jersey that I hadn't ever been in before. I think I pulled off the highway specifically to get Jersey pizza, because that is the best place to get pizza. And I pulled up to this park about 9:30, and there was a basketball court. And on the basketball court was one person. Around the basketball court were bleachers for kids to watch, parents to watch, but there was nobody there. There was a single street light over that basketball court. And I was sitting in the car, watching, because I was eating pizza. So I was watching this and eating pizza, and in the basketball court was a young woman, probably in high school, and she was practicing her hoops. She was shooting shot after shot after shot to get it in the net, to get it through. Her focus was remarkable. She knew exactly where she wanted to do it. And I kept watching her, and I'm like, it was mystical. It was transcendent, because this young woman's focus was so pristine and so perfect, and the surroundings and the environment were just right. It was 78 degrees. There was almost no humidity. The sun, the moon was just coming up. And I'm like, this is an American suburban event. This only happens in American suburbs, where a young woman can go to a basketball court, practice her skill, practice her craft, and get better at it, and be her toughest critic. And I admired her so much. I admired what I got to see. It was something private and special, and I thank her to this day. That's the good part about the suburbs. June in a suburb is magical, because the ice cream trucks just come out. The parks are still immaculate after having been cleaned in May. There isn't a lot of litter around. It's nice. You and I are happy to be outside. In many of these homes, it always surprises me, there is no air conditioning. But it doesn't matter. When I was growing up, I had no air conditioning. I opened up the two windows in my bedroom in Maplewood, New Jersey, and smelled that incredible, the incredible aroma and sense of spring in the suburbs. That is one of the great gifts of the United States of America. We are good at suburbs. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Kate Littlejohn.
I told you we should have done a sting. It would have taken an hour. We'd control all the variables, get Shales negotiating on the wire.
The baby daddy. A woman goes out and gives birth to a man's child, and she takes a little bit of ownership in him. Norja Nay Miller of Georgia. Yes, she was just in love with her man. And he, of course, had the wandering eye. So where'd he go? He went to a new lady. A new lady to be a potential baby mama. He's spreading his seed. And obviously, Norja Nay didn't take this lying down. So she went on a search. She went looking for her baby daddy and found him in the car with a harlot that has been unnamed officially by police. Shots rang out. She was shooting at her baby daddy and missed him completely, but hit the girlfriend a couple of times. Good news, the girlfriend out of the hospital, recovering fully. No big deal other than some scars. Norja Nay Miller, she went on a run. There was a police chase involved, and it ended up in the one place you could go to protect yourself. The Walmart parking lot. Yep, at Walmart, Norja Nay thought she could evade the police, yet she was caught. The baby daddy. The best way to get him back is through some sugar, not through some gunshots. For the people of Walmart, this is Vilo Hool for Sterling at Night.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story. For our next Florida Story, we're going to Clay County, Florida. And I can't be more specific than that because this isn't in a city. This is in a rural area. And what we have here is a 77-year-old Florida man who has one of what I think is always just an amazing hobby. This guy, just for funsies, is a pilot. He's got his own little plane. And when I say little plane, it's itty bitty. I don't mean like it's a G6. I mean, it's like him and one other dude in that plane. And it has the little tripod wheels. And, you know, it looks like something that I probably wouldn't get into, especially if a 77-year-old Ford man is like, oh, trust me. Actually, his plane was working fine. It's just his GPS led him to the wrong spot. And so where he was going down expecting there to be a runway, there was a cow pasture. And he just said, you know what, go for it. Get kind of light on gas here. This is a wide open space. I think I could safely land here and then figure out what went wrong. So he goes to land, and everything actually is going okay, believe it or not, until there's a herd of cows over the hill, and he doesn't want to injure the herd of cows. So after it's already landed and he's braking, he has to jerk the wheel, and it wasn't the crash landing or the emergency landing that wrecked him. It was him having to jerk the wheels during the landing process to avoid some cows that flipped him up over upside down. And so now he's laying on his back like a turtle and can't flip back over. He's actually going to be okay. 77-year-old Florida man, get a less dangerous hobby.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's third installment of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
You will hear the third episode of Florida Stories coming up on this week's podcast. And this week's podcast is Midnight Misfits. Subscribe to it at Appleland, wherever you get your fine quality podcasts, along with your filet mignon, Midnight Misfits. And this week's Midnight Misfits will feature two Florida stories, plus more of my deep thoughts about the suburbs and living in the suburbs, which was never my choice. Never my choice. Now, let me share something with you, because you and I have been friends for a long time, and you're a misfit just like me. I'm going to have a procedure this week. I'm going to have an AFib procedure, an ablation. And what that's supposed to do is end AFib in my heart. AFib, as you probably know, is when your heart beats irregularly. And it affects people from 18 to 80. There's no age issue. And what it does is it doesn't feel like a heart attack. It's uncomfortable. Your heart beats irregularly. It's difficult to even feel it. It's sometimes difficult to even know if it's going on there. Sometimes it's asymptomatic. But what this is going to be, it's a 45-minute procedure where they put me out. Now, it used to be a four-hour procedure where you were sort of awake. That sounds like a really bad idea. But when they said, no, we have it perfected now to 45 minutes and you go asleep completely, I'm like, I go to sleep completely? Okay, can we do that now? Well, no, we have to do some more testing and all. They're going to do this. And the result should be that I'll have no more of that fluttering of the heart. But the reason that I'm supposed to have it is not because of any vague discomfort to me, but because AFib can cause strokes. It can cause the heart to stop for 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds, which can deprive blood to the brain, and that's how you get a stroke. I'm going to have that done this week, but because it's one of those procedures where, and you should go home right away after it. I'm like, really? I should go home right after you've ablated my heart? Yes, no problems. I'll be with you next Sunday. I will be live with you next Sunday from New York City, from Manhattan. Which means, what does it mean? It means that I'm forced to spend a week with my sister-in-law, my wife's sister. Their big problem in Greenwich, Connecticut is getting their pond dredged. Did you hear what I said? They have a pond. They have a swimming pool. They have an air-conditioned, centrally air-conditioned barn. And their big issue is, how do we get the pond dredged properly? Oh, and we need to add another floor to our home. What? Yeah, they need to add another floor to their home. It's a single floor house. It's a ranch house. And then they started to do that and found out that the original house could not support the weight of a second floor, which I could have told them just at a glance. They didn't need big engineering studies that they overpaid for. I will be there for a week, and that means the quality of my stories will increase dramatically as I share the horrors of being with all of my relatives, my in-law relatives, up close, very close. But I will share with you my week and all of the excitement that I'm going to have, I'm sure, next Sunday, live from New York City, from Manhattan. And then after my show on Sunday, you know what I get to do? The best thing I ever get to do after a show, I get to walk to Chinatown and eat at a 24-hour Chinese restaurant. Yes, in real cities, they're open 24 hours a day. And it's the most spectacular Chinese food you could ever imagine. I will take pictures. I will put it up on Facebook. It seems to be a very big thing on Facebook and Twitter that you post pictures of your food, which I've always felt to be vaguely tacky. I'll never do what a lot of people do, which is they post pictures of themselves in a hospital bed. Now, I don't want to see you in a hospital bed. I don't want to see you at all, but I certainly don't want to see you in a hospital bed. Where did anybody come up with that idea of posting pictures of my injury? You don't want to see pictures of my injury. What a bad idea. My friend, it is so much fun to be with you. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Update on the 17-year-old. The 17-year-old was in a car wreck in January. And you know what? She had to have a second round of MRIs to find out that she didn't have one sprain in her knee. She had two, which is why it wasn't healing. And they might have to put a screw in her wrist from the fracture and trauma that she had in her wrist. I will give you complete updates on that. But you gave me so much great advice about how to get a lawyer, how to argue the charges, she was just a passenger. And our goal is to make sure that she has the health care that she needs for the rest of her life. That's our goal. We're working on that. Meeting with the lawyer this week and should have more information that may be useful to you in your life if you ever get in a car wreck. I had never been in one before. I had no idea what to do. I have no idea what to do, but you told me what to do, and it was so helpful. And that is why the greatest gift that you and I receive is a request for help.
My classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Next Sunday. All right. Right. Stay bright.